News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio, where you want it, when you want it.
I'm John Gormley. Welcome. I'll tell you, in the middle of January or February, you thought to yourself, I know at least once, I live for days like this in summer, a beautiful Saskatchewan day, and I'm so glad that you have dropped in this morning. Hey, did you see the new survey out from our buddies at Incitrix on Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans? It is a terrific survey, a taking of the pulse in Rider Nation, if you will. We're going to get into that this hour, and some thoughts on how is the provincial government handling that oil spill along the North Saskatchewan River. I suspect the usual suspects, the political critics and the like, are not happy because they haven't been happy with anything Brad Wall has done in the last 9 years. I suspect other people think it's been handled well. We'll get you in on what this oil spill has meant from your perspective. Boy, a lot of issues trending today. You know I'm a lawyer as well as a talk show host. And for those of us who practice law, and I don't practice as much, obviously, as I did when I was in full private practice years ago, law does, the profession of law, so many good things in upholding and educating people on the rule of law, on the Constitution, on the way we as Canadians govern ourselves. But I have been stunned. And I do pin some of this on the rabid law school left-wing grievance-collecting academics and faculty. But it's not just that crowd. There are members of law societies, in other words, the licensing bodies of lawyers in Nova Scotia, Ontario, and BC, who have been behaving like bigots. And that's one thing that's inconsistent with the love of the law, to be a bigot. And the target of their bigotry has been, of all things, one little university on the West Coast. Trinity Western University in Langley, BC, had announced the plans to have a law school. And for many students who are of the Christian faith, who have been to Trinity Western and taken other degree programs, this was the logical next step. But you see, at Trinity Western, there is, among other things, a thing called the Community Covenant. And these are Christians, people of faith, who students agree to a covenant. It's a code of conduct. It requires students not to gossip, not to engage in behavior that involves obscene language, prejudice, harassment, lying, cheating, stealing, pornography, drunkenness, sexual intimacy that, quote, violates the sacredness of marriage between a man and a woman. Now you know where we're going. Many of the zealots in these law societies have said, no, no, marriage is something that now recognize that Canadian law is between man and man, woman and woman, trans and trans, whatever it is. I mean, marriage is not exclusively a sacred relationship between a man and a woman. And therefore, if you go to that university and sign that covenant, and 3 years later you graduate with a law degree, and you seek to get articles and practice in my Ontario, Nova Scotia, or BC, you shouldn't be allowed to be a lawyer. This, to me, is bizarre, that kind of thinking. So Trinity Western has found itself under siege in these three provinces. So you've got to follow now what is going on in those three provinces. And we're going to get an update from Barry Bussey in Trent, Ontario, who is the Director of Legal Affairs at the Canadian Council of Christian Charities, because what happened this week was in Nova Scotia, the barristers there, or the Law Society, originally had made this decision. They wouldn't accredit Trinity Western students. It went to the Superior Courts, who overturned that decision, went to the Court of Appeal, which also overturned the decision by the barristers. So now the next stop would be the Supreme Court. So the courts have said the barristers cannot block the graduates of this Christian school. But knowing the tenacity and the ferocity of the rabid grievance collectors in the Nova Scotia Law Society, I would expect they're going to seek leave to the Supreme Court, but I haven't been following this closely enough. Barry Bussey has, and we find him in Trent, Ontario this morning. Barry, welcome aboard.
Well, it's great to be here, John.
Explain for me what the effect is of this Nova Scotia Court of Appeal decision earlier this week.
Right. Well, what happened is that the Nova Scotia Court of Appeal basically ruled in favor of an earlier decision, as you just pointed out, by Justice Jamie S. Campbell of the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia, wherein Justice Campbell said that the Nova Scotia Barrister Society did not have the authority to basically make a decision on a law or on a law school out in British Columbia when it's in Nova Scotia. And the Court of Appeal agreed with Justice Campbell and said that the Barrister Society did not have that jurisdiction. And it was quite interesting, some of the comments the Court of Appeal said, and it basically decided the decision on what we call administrative grounds. In other words, you didn't have the jurisdiction to worry about the admissions requirement of a law school when your primary concern should be about whether or not a graduate of a law school or that law school is able to graduate individuals who are competent to practice law. And the Federation of the Law Societies of Canada had already ruled that it was competent. Even the Nova Scotia Barrister Society agreed to that. And so really what is at issue is that the Nova Scotia Barrister Society did not like the admissions requirement, the community covenant, as you pointed out. And the court said, look, you can't go punishing students for something that you don't like at the law school. In fact, the court said Trinity Western's law graduate is not Trinity Western's alter ego. You can't go being upset with the student when you're upset with the admissions criteria at the university, and you have no authority to even do anything with that issue because that's not in your bailiwick.
With us in Trent, Ontario, live on CJME and CKOM, Barry Bussey, Director of Legal Affairs at the Canadian Council of Christian Charities. So the next stop, one presumes, for the Nova Scotia barristers, because they've been dug in awfully deep on this, would be, I assume, to seek leave of the Supreme Court. But is there any sense they're going to do that, or will they wait to see what's happening in these other two provinces that are also trying to block the students?
Heard from the Ontario court, Trinity Western has already announced that they will be appealing that Court of Appeal decision, which went against Trinity. You know, it's hard to say. A lot of factors are going to be in play here now for the Nova Scotia Barrister Society. They've now lost twice. It has been very expensive for them to fight this. They've also, as a result, had to increase the licensing fees for lawyers in Nova Scotia in order to help pay for this case. And so it has its own internal politics that it got to deal with as to whether or not it will continue. We haven't heard, but you're right. It will be, the next step is the Supreme Court. And I think it's important for it to get there because we need to resolve the issues once and for all. But then again, in today's age, once and for all may not be for all because the Supreme Court of Canada in 2001 already dealt with admissions requirement of Trinity Western dealing with its education degree, and now it's facing this today. So when is once and for all?
Yeah, and the whole thing about lately, we've joked often that that novel concept called stare decisis has been sort of walked out by the Supreme Court in a number of cases recently anyway. So
that's right.
Yeah, who knows where this court's moving. So in Ontario, the Court of Appeal there, as you say, ruled against Trinity Western. So that will head to the Supreme Court. What's going on in B.C.?
Well, in B.C., we're now waiting for its decision. We made arguments there early last month, in the first week of June. And so we are waiting for that decision. Now, in that case, it's also very interesting because there, the Law Society originally gave approval to Trinity Western. Then, because of the political pressure that it faced amongst its members, it ended up calling a referendum, and then the referendum went against Trinity Western, and the court, the Supreme Court in BC, says, well, look, you can't fetter your discretion. You can't just leave it up to the members to decide this. You, the benchers, the law society, need to decide it. And so now it's at the Court of Appeal where it was argued, and we are now waiting for that decision. And we expect that, given, I wasn't expecting really Ontario to be so soon. I would have thought we wouldn't hear anything until the fall, but Ontario and now Nova Scotia, so I'm expecting any time to hear from British Columbia.
Barry Bussey with us. So in terms of the main arguments you make, and that courts have accepted or not accepted, clearly there's the issue that this is a private university. There's another issue, though, in terms of its relationship to the public taxpayer, these sorts of things. This body is not receiving money from any level of government. So what's the most compelling argument you make that grads of Trinity Western who have signed the covenant should be permitted to be teachers, lawyers, or whatever it is they want to be?
Here's the thing. Like, if ultimately the law societies were to be successful in this whole thing, what would that mean? Because part of their arguments are saying, well, because the school, even though it's not a public institution, even though it doesn't receive government money, it is nevertheless involved in public activity, i.e. running a university. Well, the fact of the matter is, churches have been running universities since about 600 AD, so it's been quite a long history of this process. And the reality is, what are we going to say then? Are we then going to say that every time that an entity seeks to have government permission to operate, that somehow the government must look into that entity and see whether it agrees with its religious positions on who knows what? And it strikes me as a overreach, an attempt of saying, look, let's everyone agree that this is what now is to be the new accepted norm. Anybody who is against it, sorry, but you're not going to get government recognition for your program. It strikes me as very odd and very problematic in the long term. You'd mentioned stare decisis. That's one issue that I think the Supreme Court is going to have to say, hey, look, you know, they make a decision 15 years ago, now it's being challenged again. What does that look like? But I think the bottom line is that if the law societies are successful, then as the court said in 2001, if you say that because the school has this particular view on marriage, which you disagree with, well, what is it to stop the profession to say, well, let's look at each individual member now. What do you believe on this issue? And should you practice law? Should you teach or whatever because you have this particular view that is the same as the university? So I think that to me is the most compelling argument to say, hey, hold on here now. There's something wrong with this picture. And over and above that, we've got to realize that Trinity Western is not even subject to the charter. So why are we, like, Nova Scotia Court of Appeal had it correct. They said, look, we don't even get off first base because Trinity is not subject to the charter.
Barry, great having you by today. Thank you for clarifying this. And if you don't mind, I'd like to keep in touch on the future cases.
Absolutely. Love to, John.
Barry Bussey, Trent, Ontario, Director of Legal Affairs for the Canadian Council of Christian Charities. So, a victory in the latest round for Trinity Western. A defeat a month or so ago when Ontario's highest court ruled against them. All of this about a level of bigotry that has raised its head among certain people in the regulation and practice of law that I think is so unseemly. I'm John Gormley. This is News Talk 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I'm John Gormley. Good to have you here. Greetings and thanks for checking in. So you may have followed from afar or not, from afar obviously being here on the prairies, Trinity Western University, and a number of you, and I keep bumping into people and it's just a random coincidence, who will say, hey, I went to TWU, and you'll think, really? It's a Christian university in Langley, B.C. And based on the treatment of this university, you can see why we don't have more Christian universities in Canada. In the States, they are abundant. It is a completely church-funded university. It doesn't rely on any kind of public money. It's a private university. Back in 2001, and this went all through the 90s, they were trying to say that an education student educated at Trinity Western would not be allowed to be a teacher because they're a Christian. My God, what could they do to the minds of children, those darn Christians? Well, the Supreme Court of Canada laid out a pretty clear standard for why licensing bodies would have to accredit somebody who went to TWU. And it had everything to do with competency as a teacher, not what you inquire and believe their opinions are or their faith is. Well, we're seeing the same thing again now with lawyers. And I use the word bigotry with some thought into the definition of the word bigotry and some contemplation. This is not me just blasting off on the radio. The behavior of some lawyers toward Trinity Western has been absolutely, in my mind, unacceptable. And it's been akin to bigotry. But you can get away with behaving like that toward Christians because this particular religious group has the students sign a community covenant or a code of conduct that includes sexual intimacy, no sexual intimacy, that would violate the sacredness of marriage between a man and a woman. And Ontario, BC, or sorry, Nova Scotia was so dug in on this. The barristers there actually went back and amended their regulations. They were trying to find so many ways to stop Trinity Western that you cannot unlawfully discriminate against gays and lesbians and be a lawyer in Nova Scotia. So now every lawyer in Nova Scotia, and of course it's not good to discriminate against anybody, think about it, but they actually went back and they tried to hang their hat on that one. Well, the Ontario Court of Appeal a couple of days ago wasn't convinced. It says, first of all, on the charter, a private school with no nexus to government is not, as you know, affected by the Charter of Rights. The charter affects public agencies and government. And then the court did a pretty good and a reasoned analysis on why you might have a big issue with the school someone goes to, but the graduate of a law school must be judged on their character, their capability, their fitness, their competency to practice law. Now, it would be nice if this were all good, but the Ontario Court of Appeal earlier this spring went the opposite way. It ruled that the Ontario Law Society could prevent students from Trinity Western, and then BC, they're awaiting a decision there. But this thing has just bedeviled those three law societies. And even every so often here on the prairies in Alberta or Saskatchewan, somebody will go, you know, we want to revisit this. Well, I would think the prairie law societies are awaiting the final, because this will end up in the Supreme Court in one form or another, the final utterance of the Supreme Court. But even this is a court, notwithstanding its decision in 2001, that has recently not been bound by its own decisions. So one has to be very careful on that. Hey, another story out. We didn't follow this very much. Constable James Forcillo, he's the man who, in a volley of bullets, shot down that troubled teen on the streetcar in Toronto, Sammy Yatin, and this was in 2013. It was a bit of a weird case. The officer was not convicted of murder, but he was actually convicted of attempted murder by a jury. And of course, we have no way of knowing what the jury thought, how it came to that. Officer Forcillo, in the death of Sammy Yatim, has been sentenced to 6 years in jail for the shooting. Not for the killing, but for the excessive shooting and the constructed attempted murder case around that. Other stories in play today, and we get to every one of them here. Coming up next, pipeline oil spill and a new survey out on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. This is News Talk 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm drawing warmly for those of you interested, and I'm one of these people who the more salacious aspects of politics, the older I get, the less I'm A, surprised, sadly enough, and B, doesn't float my boat the way it used to. But I think if it affects or directly impairs a politician's ability to do his or her job, then all of us have got a heck of an interest in this. Hunter Tutu, who is a Northern Liberal MP, and again, in Justin Trudeau's equity achieving cabinet, 50% male, 50% female, Aboriginal, Sikh. I mean, you had every single ethnic group represented. I think in his caucus, you had every region of Canada represented. You had all of these things. Well, Mr. Tutu was the minister at the time that was named for Northern Canada. And I'm trying to remember what his portfolio was. I'm apologizing that when he was put originally into cabinet, he was the fisheries minister. And Hunter Tutu was elected from Nunavut. And again, when you look at the vast three northern ridings, and he's a guy who had a long-term involvement in northern territorial politics, and all of a sudden, he just disappeared. Now, the Liberals were having their convention earlier this spring, and it was in and around that convention, Hunter Tutu was dropped from cabinet, and the announcement was made he was going into rehab. And it was that quick, lickety-split. Now, there was all sorts of rumor that, quote, something had happened at that big Liberal convention. And again, this is where you think, okay. Look, we've all had enough friends with substance abuse, and in particular alcohol issues. The key is to get some insight into what's going on, admit you're powerless, I'll go back to the first step of the 12, and get yourself well. And it's so often not the fact you're drinking, it's why you're drinking and what you're drinking to try and cope with and overcome. So a lot of trauma issues, a lot of other things. So off Hunter Tutu went. Well, he reappeared this week. And surprisingly, the Prime Minister's office issued a pretty blunt statement. You see, when he left, he was no longer in cabinet, and he was no longer a member of the Liberal caucus. So the Liberals have kind of booted him, so he sits as an independent. Now, contrast this with Seamus O'Regan, the beautiful CTV talking head TV guy, who also checked himself into rehab. Mr. Trudeau had tweeted and gone on that Seamus has my full support. I'm doing my Justin Trudeau. So Seamus, you know, Trudeau just loves the guy and was all over him and said, you know, he wished him well. With Hunter Tutu, not so much. He just said it was a very difficult situation, and he wouldn't answer any questions why he left the caucus. So even when he got back yesterday, the PM's office just said, we wish Mr. Tutu well as he resumes his parliamentary functions as MP for Nunavut. His status with regard to the Liberal caucus remains unchanged. So in other words, he's out. Still. Well, Robert Fife, who is a longtime reporter around Parliament Hill, is writing in the Globe and Mail today that the reason he was banned from the caucus had to do with an inappropriate relationship with a junior female staff member. And apparently this inappropriate relationship, excuse me for being a bit of a cynic, in this day and age, as long as someone is 18, is there any such thing anymore as an inappropriate relationship? And there used to be, publicly used to be judged for these things, but I don't know what an inappropriate relationship with a junior staffer means. It can sure poison a workplace pretty quickly if the person works with you and the word's out that the two of you are sleeping together. That's a little difficult on morale, but none of this we are getting any confirmation of. Robert Fife got a hold of Mr. Tutu, who five times in a row, when he kept asking him, is this about the staffer, in about inappropriate relationship, all Mr. Tutu would say is, I recognize there are rumors out there. I mean, that's politics. For me, the difficult thing was admitting I had a problem with alcohol. I had to deal with it. That's what I chose to do. And he would keep coming back to the speaking point on, for me, what the issue is alcohol. So no confirmation, but again, to the extent people have inappropriate relationships, and I just query these days what the heck one of those would be, if it impairs your ability to perform, as in this case the Minister of Fisheries, or your alcohol does, you got to get it fixed. But Mr. Tutu is not welcomed back, apparently, into the fold of the Liberals. Okay, help me out on this whole oil spill thing. We are getting a pretty clear sense that, and for one of you who said, where the heck is the oil spill relative to Prince Albert? Well, the oil itself was spotted in the environs of Prince Albert, is what Mr. Toy told us, who is the city manager. That was Monday morning. And they closed down the water intake at that point and announced they would be building this 30-kilometer pipeline to bring water over to PA. The NDP politically came out yesterday and said the response by the government was not quick enough. The government could have done a better job of informing people of ongoing issues. The lack of communication is very concerned for the communities who had to hear from local officials or deal through the media and Facebook. There was not enough direct communication by government. Premier Wall yesterday laid out what he saw as the unacceptable response in some respects by Husky. He did say that Husky was involved with the communities in fixing this. And the premier, I thought, was pretty clear that the issue is operationally to get stuff fixed. But what do you see the role of a politician as? A Premier Wall yesterday, as he was wrapping up with the media, said, and I will be heading to North Battleford in PA tomorrow. That was today. And within minutes, his office issued a statement and said, no, he's not going to go to those areas. He'll go at a later point. And the mayor of Prince Albert, for one, said not that they were not welcome, the premier. They simply said that it was best that the premier and the Minister of Government Relations, Jim Ryder, be in Regina coordinating this, and they weren't needed on the ground. Speaking of on the ground, Mr. Wotherspoon, the Trent Wotherspoon, the NDP interim leader, was there yesterday, standing at the river, taking photo ops of him pointing decisively and shaking hands and being very involved. So do you think there is a role for politicians in this? There clearly is a role of leadership. There clearly is a role of laying out to people what's going on. And there have been daily briefings from the Water Security Agency, from the Environment Ministry and others. But do you think the provincial government's handled this the right way? Or would you say the premier should have had a higher personal profile? Think about that. And we talked about what the premier did in the floods, in the big fire last year, talked about what Rachel Notley did from Alberta in the fire this year. And it was really all the same template, is let the officials work it out and get things done and people safe, and then the politicians come later. Less in Saskatoon, what were the powers that be in Prince Albert, Battleford, and Melfort thinking? As the unfortunate catastrophe with the oil spill unfolds, they welcome the NDP leader to come to town for a photo op session. A leader who has the authority and power to do nothing. Then the premier, the guy with the power and the authority, is told to stay away. What kind of wizards are running these cities? Les. See, I'm not sure it was welcoming and turning away. I mean, that's the easy media narrative, but what do you think? Tom in Kindersley. While the oil spill should not be minimized and will be cleaned up, the big issue of people's safety is water supply. I criticize the cities and the Water Security Agency for no clear contingency plan for the inevitable. Why would they not draw water from wells along the river instead of directly? Kindersley and Eston have run a 30-mile pipeline for over 50 years that way, mainly wells with shield wells around them. Spill in the river doesn't affect our system. Now, that's what North Battleford did. They were able to go to wells, so they had enough water. PA, I assume, doesn't have the wells in place, but it's an interesting observation. Dawn in Saskatoon, the NDP pulled the same stunt with the fires. It took time and resources to fly in to do grandstanding while everybody else was trying to get people out. what would have happened had a problem arisen because a politician was on the ground. Community leaders, this is Len in Regina, recognize it's a waste of Wall's time and theirs now. The opposition leader is irrelevant and has nothing else to do. All right, those are a few of your thoughts. So what do you think of what you have seen? And I'm interested if you are a person in North Battleford or PA or now Melfort. Do you think you've been getting enough information? Now, I would think the information I would expect doesn't come from the premier. He's the head of government. But it better the heck come from the water agency, from the Ministry of the Environment, and your local municipalities. They're the people tasked with ensuring your infrastructure is working. So what has the response been like in your view? Should the premier have been doing more than he did in terms of public face on this? Join the conversation. I'm John Gormley. This is News Talk 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Oh, I'm terrible. But I just schooled one of you at 306-306 on geography. How can it run downstream if it goes from Lloyd to North Battleford? Mountains, Edmonton, Lloyd, Battlefords, PA, then the Forks go past Melfort, then the Forks east of PA, North and Sask become one, and then they keep running. Isn't it Hudson Bay? Yeah, Hudson Bay. All downstream. So, okay. Chris now knows he's been schooled, which is all that counts. 1-877-332-8255. Dan in Saskatoon, I'm asking you, do you think Brad Wall has responded properly to this whole oil spill that is running downstream? Dan in Saskatoon, we didn't vote for Brad Wall to get on water and set up booms. Response on a government leadership communication stance is his job, not to mention informing the public of actions that are underway, and he's done fine, thanks. John, I would say the real grandstander in the PA Wall story is Greg Dionne. The mayor, is he not up for re-election? Dan and Shell Lake. Melfort's boil water advisory was lifted today, I believe. This comes from Jamie. We had a backup water source to go to. We are on the old system now. Okay, I didn't know that, but thank you for giving us the heads up. All right. The premier should have come to Prince Albert to check out the oil spill. Then he could drive back and forth on the bridge to know we need a second bridge in PA. Ryan, you're always working overtime. Okay, let's go to Mike in Martinsville. Has the political handling of this thing been done right or wrong, Mike?
Well, the way I see it, there's two ways to handle it. There's the Brad Wall intelligent way or the NDP kick in the doors and start pointing fingers way. The Brad Wall way is to sit back, let the powers that be that are there to take care of this take care of it, get all the answers, get all the facts, and then come out and make your statement. Rather than jumping out of the gate, making a statement, and when people have questions to ask, you don't have any answers. I think he did it the proper way.
1-877-332-8255. How do you think this entire water thing has been handled? The Battlefords appears to be getting through it okay. In PA, the real problem has been not just the city, which had some ample warning. A lot of people, and this is an urban thing anywhere, a lot of people in acreage country and smaller communities adjoining PA are on city water. So city turns off the taps, those people are without water. Which brings me to Elaine in Prince Albert. Hey, you're one of these people affected because you're on city water?
Yes. Yep. Rural city water. We were one of the first to sign up when the pipeline was put out. And we do have a holding tank. But what our biggest complaint is, John, as rural subscribers, is the lack of communication. Yes, we listen to the newscast. Yes, we do all that stuff. But we were told to conserve, fill containers, which all of us did, I'm sure. And all of a sudden, Sunday morning, we got up, no water. Now, we weren't expecting that. And as a rural subscriber with a holding tank, we're fine. But as a realtor, I know a lot of the new acreages are in what they call a trickle system. So they don't have a holding tank. So they're really screwed. So, I mean, we're all struggling here. Communication would be nice either from the city or from the RM, which we have none of. We get everything through Facebook, Twitter, all the other avenues, and our local newspapers. So I phoned the city a few days ago, talked to the frontline people about opening up a shower facility for the rural people. I thought it would be a great PR gesture and a great goodwill gesture on the behalf of the city. So the girl gave me the spiel out of the book. Like, I said, okay, you know what? Have somebody who's a little higher up phone me, please, because I know what you've been told to say, so I want to speak to somebody else. Got a phone call back. Just happened they were going into a meeting, and the girl said, yes, we will bring it up in our meeting. I said, phone me back and let me know. A few hours later, I did get a call back saying, yes, it was going to be addressed. Yes, they were meeting with another body to discuss it, and I haven't heard a thing since. Now, as a camper and girl guys, I'm used to bailing water. We've got a above-ground small pool that we bail the water out of, boil it, go into the tub with our buckets and shower, go out, heat some more water, do your hair. I can do that, and I'm used to it. But a lot of people have no idea how to survive with no water.
That's a good point. And hopefully, particularly now that you're looking 5 days into this thing, that there would be some of those steps taken. Good point. I'm John Gormley, the latest from the 24-hour news center now on News Talk 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.